You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, we are exactly 24 hours away from Donald Trump's exit and Joe Biden's inauguration. Meanwhile, D.C. on lockdown. Keystone XL immigration laws, Defense Production Act. Joe Biden has a very long day one to-do list. And as COVID mutations arise, there is a mad race to fix Trump's vaccine failures beginning tomorrow. Speaking of which, Trump lifts a virus travel ban and fails in stripping civil service protection from tens of thousands of federal workers on his last day at work. Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell hammer out a power-sharing deal today. Will the Dems be taken to the cleaners? Atlanta prosecutors are moving to start an investigation of Trump's interference in the Georgia election certification. Meanwhile, mixed bag from progressives on Biden's latest executive appointments. However, one of those includes the historical pick of Rachel Levine to Assistant Secretary of Health, who will be the first transgender federal official confirmed by the Senate. Members of right-wing militias and extremist groups are charged across the country in the Capitol attack as suspicions grow that newly elected representative from Colorado, Laura Boebert, was in on the attack. Lastly, Proposition 22, the labor law degrading new law in California, even worse. Than we had originally thought. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. What is the beginning of the week for us? And with me, as always, Emma Viglin. Hello, Emma. Did you have a nice day off yesterday?
I did. Well, actually, I spent a great majority of the time with the TV repairman. We were 6 feet apart in mass, but it took like 5 hours to fix my internet and cable. So it wasn't that fun, actually, when I think about it.
You're the first person I've heard in over 25 years say the words TV repairman.
What else would you call him?
Was he from the cable company?
Yeah.
Okay. The cable guy.
Sure. Not Larry, but he was a cable guy.
There used to be TV repairmen because there was problems with TVs. Now it wouldn't be worth to have a TV repairman to come. The TVs are so
Well, I'm
so
an old soul, you know, so.
I understand.
I use those kinds of terms.
All right. Fair enough. Yesterday, of course, Martin Luther King's birthday. I encourage you all to go back and listen to the interview we did with Gerald Horn. If you missed that, he is a professor from University of Houston and just a fascinating scholar at large. Last night in New York City, New York Police Department really attacked peaceful Martin Luther King Day protesters, I guess you could call them. There wasn't that many of them, but it really was a stunning juxtaposition with the way that we saw police react to the folks who overran the Capitol building and the sort of the just wanton and really in many respects inexplicable aggressiveness and brutality of the police in New York City.
especially on the heels of the New York Attorney General's suit against them.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning. Hopefully our next mayor will be able to rein in the excesses of our police department, which sometimes you just get the feeling that they're just they've lost sight of what their agenda is, or maybe this is their agenda. I don't know, but it's really highly problematic. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., we keep hearing about whether there will be a peaceful transfer of power. We have already passed that threshold where you could say we've had a non-peaceful transfer of power. When you have a mob that is incited by the president of the United States, saying this colloquially, he did it legally, a mob incited to go in and crash the Capitol as they are attempting to certify the votes. There is no peaceful transition. Your opportunity to maintain a peaceful transition of power has already gone out the window. And to ensure that there's no further violence associated with the transition of power, at least within Washington, D.C., we have over 21,000 National Guards troops basically blocking off almost every street in a very wide radius around the Capitol. Here is a clip of this from Manu Raju. This is this morning, National Guard troops marching through the streets. We're going to let it roll because this is really extraordinary. The number of troops that we're seeing marching through the streets. I mean, this is just seemingly endless number of troops. And
yeah,
I think that's good. We don't need to keep going, Brendan. But there is just an extraordinary amount of troops there. It's not that they have or at least that we're aware of any specific broad threats. But there was, I think, a sense after the failure of most of these agencies involved on January 6th, a desire to not have a replay in any way. But again, the idea that we have to have all those troops out there is indicative of the fact that we have failed in executing a peaceful transfer of power. That's it. That ship has sailed. We don't have the opportunity to exhibit that. I mean, I think it's an important feature of American democracy. Your mileage may vary, but to the extent that it has any value, rhetorical or otherwise, we have failed in that.
Well, many people failed, but I think specifically quite a few people failed by implementing this kind of propaganda project. I mean, Roger Stone registered the Stop the Steal domain name back in 2016. This has been premeditated, if not by Trump, because I don't think he can see, 2 inches in front of his face. He just reacts, but by people around him. And this was the natural way that things were going to go down based on that premeditated plan by Republican operatives and including the president. Fewer and fewer people are culpable for, are claiming culpability for it or are still on that train. There are certainly many people who are culpable, but this was a project by the Republican president and it instigated this violence. So there has to be consequences for it, as we keep talking about on the show, because that's not normal. We shouldn't be seeing 20,000 troops marching in our capital because the president incited violence on behalf of his own electoral failures.
And let's be clear too on this point. there were, what was it, 140 Congress, Republican Congress people who voted against the certification.
Yeah.
This is not just a handful of people. There were almost a dozen Republican senators who voted against the certification.
Well, Sam, after the insurrection, it dropped to just 8 Republican senators. So
fair enough.
Obviously, the GOP is completely redeemed.
But the point being here is that the enablers are even in some ways more relevant. Donald Trump, obviously, but Donald Trump is gone as of tomorrow. And I imagine he is still going to be a figure in our news and our political sphere, for broadly speaking. But the Republican senators who remain, the Republican Congress people who remain, this is, I mean, certainly the majority of Republicans in the House and arguably a majority of Republican voters who bought into this entire conspiracy theory. There has to be a broader awareness on the part of the media, on the part of Democratic leaders, that this is who the Republican Party is. And any notion that there's going to be, that they have fundamentally shifted just because Donald Trump has left is, I think it's frankly, it's not only absurd, it's not only a fallacy, it's dangerous. Because
yeah. It's like a fairy tale that hurts people, right?
Exactly.
It's like a it's not just a storybook or a story that you tell your kids at night to make them feel better, or in this case, the Democrats tell themselves to make themselves feel better. There are consequences. It's like it's got
without
magical powers that reverberate throughout society, obviously. Yeah.
If you don't recognize the existence of the people that enabled Donald Trump, I can assure you, they will be enabling the next iteration of Donald Trump. It's just a question of when.
And who will probably be smarter than Donald Trump and more competent, which is scary.
Terrifying. All right, let's take a quick break. Just a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, today, after today's show, check out The Noma Key Show. You can find The Noma Key Show at youtube.com/The Noma Key Show. Chris Lombardi, Napoleon DeLegend, and Joshua Kahn Russell will be on the program. Also, today's show sponsored this is Michael for a long time. Tried to get me into meditation. So he'd be a little bit excited about this. Because I've been actually using this, not as much as I should, but I've been using it, which is, believe me, a massive, massive leap in terms of attempting me to be a little bit less stressed. I don't know if you ever noticed this yet, but I'm a little bit high stress.
What?
I don't know if you picked up on that.
Look, I want to get into meditation, so I need to try this because I'm okay. In the same boat as you. Yeah.
Apparently 34% of Americans made a resolution to be less stressed this year. I don't have a citation for that, except for it's just they put that in the copy.
Well, but, I mean, God clearly just came up with those statistics after
I wouldn't be surprised if it's that low, frankly. This has been a pretty stressful time.
Oh, totally.
Headspace is here to help. It's your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations in an incredibly easy to use app. Well, I find the whole process to be incredibly used. It's advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. There are apparently 25 published studies on Headspace benefits. There are 600,000 five-star reviews, over 60 million downloads. If you need help falling asleep, if you feel overwhelmed, I got both those. Headspace has wind down sessions and 3-minute SOS meditations. There are even meditations for kids. Here's the thing that I use Headspace for. They don't mention it here, but there are walking meditations.
Nice.
And I walk. It's probably the only healthy thing I do, probably at this point in my life, is I walk an extensive amount, almost daily. And these meditations are not that long, actually, but I end up practicing them a little bit after the guided meditations. And with the walking meditations, instead of listening to yourself to breathe, which apparently does not work for me because I immediately just start thinking about things I got to do. You pay attention to how you're walking, your gait, I guess you would call it. And I don't know that I've seen a massive difference in my stress level, but I feel like I'm starting to get into it. Like I'm getting better at it. Look, everybody deserves to feel a little happier, a little less stressful. Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/majority. That's headspace.com/majority. You get a free 1 month trial. You get access to Headspace full library of meditations for every situation. So you can try them all out over the course of a month. See if it works out for you. It's the best deal offered right now. Head to headspace.com/majority today. Headspace.com/majority. Check it out. We had another ad for Quip, but it was for this product that I haven't gotten, but I'm waiting. I don't even know why I would talk about this, but they sent me I use flossers.
Okay.
Quip now has a, so embarrassing. I'm talking about this. They have a flosser now that is refillable. Eventually they'll have us advertise for it. I'll tell it.
Awesome. What do you mean? Like putting different little flossing so you don't have to keep getting those plastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, can I get on that train, please?
It's so awesome.
AKA, can I have some of what you get?
But they sent me one for the gum and I haven't tried the gum, so I'm not going to do it. We will, just a reminder, it's your support. Also check out the AM Quickie, amquickie.com, amquickie.com. Get your 7 minutes of headline news. Okay. So getting back to some of the stuff that we can anticipate, you always hear a lot of day one stuff and it's obviously for the most part metaphorical, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, half the day, at least Joe Biden tomorrow is going to be prepping for the inauguration, I would imagine. That is like, you know, get up, you take a shower, you brush your teeth, try and put yourself together a little bit. It's going to start at noon tomorrow. We are going to be covering it, for the most part, we're going to be covering it live. We're also going to be talking to some folks who are hoping to push Joe Biden to the left. There is certainly, and we're going to go through another, you know, a couple of picks. There's certainly some indication that Joe Biden can be pushed. Some of his cabinet picks, good. Some not so great. We will talk about those. Some of his executive picks, good. Some not so great. You know, and I say this with the understanding that Joe Biden was not my preferred candidate. He was pretty low on the list of my preferred candidates. However, I do think that Joe Biden, in many respects, just tries to get into the center of where the Democratic Party is. And that is a fluid thing. And as those of us who are to the left of the Democratic Party or within the left of the Democratic Party, that fluidity can be fashioned. Here is the AP, just with a brief list of things that he is intending to do on day one. A lot of this stuff, obviously, you can't actually do, but you can sort of basically make commitments to what you're going to do. So, for instance, immediately following the inauguration, he will be signing a declaration that the U.S. is rejoining the Paris Climate Accord. Yes, signing a declaration that the U.S. is rejoining the World Health Organization. He's going to be issuing ethical standards for his administration and an order prohibiting interference in the operations of the Justice Department from other parts of government. Something that you would think that you would not need to necessarily establish. It should have been established. He will be starting the process to restore 100 public health and environmental rules that the Obama administration created and Donald Trump eliminated or weakened. There is a process, and one of the biggest, there's a couple of major implications about the Democrats taking the Senate, right? One of them, obviously, is that it's going to make it much easier for Joe Biden to get his appointees through. it's going to make it easier for him to get his judicial nominees through. It's going to allow the Democrats to pass things through reconciliation if necessary. Those are bills that specifically deal with the budget. The other is the Congressional Review Act. And this allows the House and the Senate to basically reverse any of Donald Trump's executive actions that were filed within a certain number of working days, which can actually go back to like 6 or 9 months ago in the last term of the Trump administration. And what it does is when Congress reverses those, not only does it reverse those, it creates a higher threshold for Congress in the future for going back to those. So in other words, if Donald Trump says, the EPA no longer going to or is going to recalculate the way in which environmental harm is done, where they weigh the economic cost to a company for protecting the pollution to our water as being higher as it might have been before. When Congress reverses that, if a future Congress wants to reinstitute that, it's going to take a 2/3 vote in Congress. So this happened with the Obama administration. Unfortunately, there's a lot of rules that are tough to be reestablished. Now there's an opportunity for the Democrats to do this. And I think that process being started is the administration flagging these things for Congress.
I think that's all great stuff, and especially in contrast to what we've experienced over the past 4 years, it's a stark relief. And I'm also super encouraged by the rhetoric that I'm hearing out of someone like Janet Yellen, right, who's saying to Congress that we need to go big on stimulus.
Yep.
That's a huge encouraging sign from the Biden team. Now, that's just one step. The other part is negotiating with the Senate and ensuring that they don't cave, right? And that's a big if with Biden. But you've said this before, and I borrow it now all the time, about how Biden just wants to place himself at the center of the universe of where the Democratic Party is at a current point in history. And the work that's been done by progressives over the past 4 years plus, specifically sparked by Bernie Sanders' 2016 run, that's shifted, even if it's not to the degree that we want, but what's possible in the Democratic Party, and thus it's shifted Biden. I don't even think he really fully deserves a ton of credit because he's not ideological in that way, but it does. But, you know, maybe I'm being too harsh. Maybe he does deserve credit because he could have just been 90s Joe Biden. But back in the 90s, that's where the party was.
Right.
The party's in a very different space right now. And that's
right.
Encouraging. That's a reason for optimism. And I know both sides, you know, Republicans equal Democrats. That's simplistic and easy for people to understand, and it's also disempowering, and right now in this current political moment it's not true. It was a lot closer to the truth 4 years ago than it is right now, to be honest, even if Joe Biden is the representative of the Democratic Party.
Continuing on with those things, start the process of rejoining the deal, the Iran nuclear deal.
Yep.
Executive action to end travel restrictions on people from a variety of Muslim majority countries. Executive action to protect from deportation children who came here, people who came here illegally as children by no decision of their own. That is the reinstitution of DACA. We're going to talk a little bit more about immigration in a moment. Executive action to make masks mandatory on federal property. On federal property.
And international travel. That was the other thing.
Well, yes, Donald Trump is ostensibly going to stop the bans on international travel out of a fear of these new strains of COVID. Biden, I imagine, is going to reinstitute them on day one. There will be an ask of everyone to wear masks for 100 days. Steps to extend pandemic era restrictions on evictions and foreclosures. The Education Department is going to be asked to, and I imagine will, extend the student loan payments and interest for millions with student loan debt. We will see if Joe Biden, at the very least, has promised to send a bill to Congress to relieve $10,000 worth of student debt. He has the ability, many people argue. In fact, I haven't heard a cogent argument that he doesn't. If they have the ability to put a pause on recouping student loan payments, then you also have the ability of forgiving those loans. In fact, we have many programs where student loans are forgiven in specific instances. All executive action, he has the ability to do that, and hopefully there'll be enough pressure that maybe
Although they are watering it down
in Congress.
They seem to already be watering it down a little bit.
Oh, without a doubt.
Expectations, but you know, yeah.
Without a doubt. So
that's a huge disappointment in my view in terms of what they're expecting.
We'll get more into this immigration legislation that is expected to go to Congress as part of an offer to path citizenship for 11 million people in the country who are here without documentation. Legislation to go to Congress to repeal liability protections for gun manufacturers. This is a huge deal. Tightening some other aspects of gun control. There is a longstanding law in this country. There's really only two industries that have any type of liability protection that come from the use of their products if they're being used properly. And that is vaccine makers. Because of public policy, it's impossible to create a vaccine for something, let's say, like COVID, where some small percentage of people don't have an allergic reaction. So far, knock on wood, the reactions to the millions of doses of COVID vaccine that has been out there has been relatively mild, allergic reactions. There is some report of a batch of Moderna vaccinations in California that they are concerned about
they officially recalled that 1/10 of the vaccines that were put out there.
Yeah. But generally speaking, the vaccine as it's produced has provided, you know, very little reaction. Now, it's conceivable that one out of a million people who get it may have some adverse reaction. And so the vaccination companies, because this is part of a public policy measure, their liability is dealt with in a separate court system, vaccine court. The only other industry that has anything even remotely like that is the gun industry, which has a liability shield for their weapons, not if they malfunction. They are subject to the same liability standards there. And we've covered a horrible story about Remington that hid a default in their guns for years. Horrible in the past. But these guns, if they're used properly, kill people on a regular basis. They kill toddlers. They kill neighbors. They kill friends. They kill in a myriad people. And they are protected from liability. Whereas in the future, if this liability protection was to go away, consumers might have a case to say to gun manufacturers, you have the ability to make this safer. You could put fingerprint IDs on it. We have it on our phones now. You could easily put this on. You could put other trigger protections that would make your product safer and not have it kill people accidentally in the way that it does, or so easily, like a toddler who finds the gun and ends up shooting themselves. There's a reason why we have on medicine bottles kid protection, because we found over time that kids can get into these bottles, and there's an obligation for these drug manufacturers to do that. So that's a big one. And there will be new ones going out after that. He's going to institute the Defense Production Act. It is unclear how that's going to go about, in an effort to ramp up the production of not only the vaccine, but apparently there is, and this is just sort of bizarre that we're talking about stuff like this, in the Pfizer vials of vaccines, right now, most hospitals or distribution centers are getting 5 doses out of these vials. And that is because of the nature of the syringes that the government has procured to to Dalel. But apparently there are other syringes that can actually pull 6 doses out of these vials. That is an increase of almost 20% in terms of overnight. However, there's not enough of these latter type of syringes being made. It's conceivable the Defense Production Act will be used to get more of those type of syringes out. We should also talk about these immigration laws. He has the ability to reinstitute DACA and I believe DAPA, which is the extension of the DACA protections from the children who were brought here illegally to also their wider family members.
Yes.
He will also send legislation to the House and then presumably to the Senate. Do you want to go through some of those, Emma?
Well, I mean, basically what this immigration proposal would do in broad strokes is they say modernize the immigration process. But in short, it would allow for a path to citizenship, which I think would take 8 years, also make it easier for asylum seekers along the border. And really what it does is 11 million undocumented immigrants. Biden's proposal gives them a path to citizenship. It's longer than I would propose. 8 years is, I think, way too long. There's an indentured servitude quality to it, but it is obviously an improvement if we're looking at the gutter of immigration reform and policy, which is the Trump administration.
So they would have a temporary status for five years, and then they would get a green card after 5 years. And then within 3 years after that green card use, they would be able to apply for citizenship. And that also, obviously the DACA stuff he can do by executive action, but they would make that statutory. They would in there, and it's unclear to me, but there's three prongs to this. Like you said, the border management, you talked about that. It would supposedly, broadly speaking, move the refugee and asylum programs back to a more humane and orderly process. There would be a hope to reinstate the program granting minors from Central America temporary legal residence in the United States. That program was ended by the Trump administration in 2017. It would set up a reunification program for Central American relatives of U.S. citizens and would allow those who have already been approved for U.S. residency to be admitted in the country rather than waiting at home for an opening. We have plenty of room in this country. And on top of which, and it's unclear to me what specifically they're talking about, but they are recognizing, at least in their rhetoric at this point, that one of these prongs in dealing with citizenship needs to address the causes of migration, which are economic and safety in a lot of these countries. We've talked in the past, Honduras.
Does that connect to our drug policy? Like, that seems fairly broad, but is there any, I didn't see.
No indication yet of what that's going to be.
Right.
But we do know that, you know, Honduras, one of the murder capitals of the world. There is, you've got still a lot of paramilitaries there and a lot of drug, like you say, drug cartels. And we know, and I would imagine Joe Biden knows, one would hope, after decades of a war on drugs, that it's been an abject failure in every single possible measure. You could, whatever metric you use for the drug on the failure of the drug the war on drugs, it has failed.
Drug use, drug addiction, still static or has gone up, and funding just continues to go up. And then just lastly about Biden's immigration, the way he adjusts the federal government's relationship with ICE, I mean, he theoretically has the power to break the contracts with ICE. that the Trump administration expanded, but he's not going to do that. Obviously, he's come out feverishly against abolish ICE, even though that's my position. But does he change their funding? Does he allow for immigration and customs or ICE basically to have less power and less kind of immunity when it comes to the brutalization of immigrants? Is he going to change that relationship? I think he will do so marginally, but we'll have to see.
Well, I mean, if we're going to put all 11 million undocumented immigrants in this country on a path to citizenship, one would expect that ICE's role, at least internally in the country, would be greatly diminished and should be. There's no reason for it at that point. And so hopefully we will, there will be a certain amount of like sort of questioning of like, how are we dispersing our resources when we don't need an ICE? You want to put people at the border? I mean, I would prefer if you would demilitarize the border, frankly. But certainly internally in the country, you don't need if you're going to allow. Now, this applies to immigrants who have been here since January 1 of 2021. Part of that is they want to discourage people from coming. But I think, frankly, we're going to have to deal with that process in a better fashion. We shall see. We were talking about the COVID response. And this is going to be the big issue, I think.
The defining feature of his presidency, potentially.
Without a doubt. The big, like, I guess, dilemma that we have now. He is trying to get a million doses of vaccine administered per day. Apparently, as of like last week, it's reported by David Dane at the American Prospect, they're pretty close to the million a day you need if you want to hit 100 million in 100 days. 900,000 daily doses is the 7-day rolling average, according to David Dayan over at The Prospect. So to get to a million per day doesn't seem like that huge of a task. The problem is that there are new variants of COVID-19, including the B.1.1.7 from Great Britain, that are, while not any more lethal, far more contagious. And so you're going to need more than 100 million doses in that first 100 million days if you want to control this pandemic. And
just so people are clear, it doesn't seem like the vaccine, its efficacy is affected by the variants. It just increases the contagiousness. And thus, obviously, we're going to see ramping up death. I mean, it could, but that's not what we're seeing right now.
Right. I mean, the bottom line is there's just not enough evidence out there yet to make any definitive statements on what the implications of these more contagious variants are. I mean, nobody's quite clear on, are they more contagious because you can get them by touching things? Is it they're more contagious because they travel through, non-N95 masks more efficiently? Is it that you don't need, you can get a bigger viral load quicker? Do they replicate quicker within the human body? None of these things are clear yet. There's just simply not enough data and evidence. The scientists are studying it.
It does seem to affect the efficacy of the antibody drugs, though.
Which is that right?
Yeah, from what I've read.
We will see. I mean, a lot of this stuff, again, is we haven't gotten there yet. But the big key is going to be to ramp up the production of what they call these high dead space syringes, as opposed to the low dead space syringes, so that you can get an extra 20% out of these bottles of Pfizer vials of vaccine that need to go out. And that's going to be the big challenge, or at least one of them, by the Biden administration. And 3 days ago, they confirmed what a lot of us suspected they would do. They're going to use the Defense Production Act. How they're going to do that yet, we don't know. It's going to be a function of where they see the greatest need. We were talking about Donald Trump rolling back the lifting of the virus travel ban. Biden folks are adamant that they're going to prevent that from happening. The other last minute attempt that Donald Trump had was, we spoke about this in the past couple of weeks, a Schedule F directive. It was essentially a directive to to undo the civil service protection for tens of thousands of federal workers, ostensibly to get in more political partisan people into these positions. And what it really is ultimately a part of was the Trump agenda from early in the Trump administration. Steve Bannon, when he was part of the administration officially, I suspect he's still quite in contact with Donald Trump.
Much like Roger Stone, just creeping behind the scenes, making things happen and destroying whatever's left of our democracy.
I'm sure you remember when Steve Bannon went to the CPAC, which is the conservative, the big conservative confab they have every year, and said,
"Oh, you know, I go every year, right? Have a great time."
No. I would be surprised if you haven't covered it in the past.
I actually have not. That's almost too awful for me to consider actually going there.
It's like
I would rather go to a Trump rally.
It's like Comic-Con for the worst people
exactly.
on the planet.
Yeah.
And so at CPAC, Steve Bannon announced that their number one agenda was the destruction of the administrative state. And when you remove the civil service protections from our government workers, you make these positions become highly politicized, highly partisan. You lose the expertise. You lose their protection to do the right thing based upon science or good, sound public policy because they are either afraid of political retribution or they are in and themselves highly politicized. And so this is one of those things where apparently the order, the paperwork needed to reclassify these affected employees will not reach the president's office until after tomorrow. And this is a prime example of how, I mean, I think people who work in big companies know that there's, you know, there's certain things you can slow walk. And this is probably one of those. The Biden administration and President Biden is not expected to sign those things.
Well, it's almost like, you know, these civil servants, they got this paperwork. They had to, you know, do all these things. Oh, it's going to take a lot longer. They don't want these Trump appointees being burrowed into their agencies and gumming up the works. It was just, look, you got to love it, right?
Yep. All right. Let's play this clip. We meant to play this earlier about the National Guard presence in Washington for tomorrow. Here is Tucker Carlson, who, incidentally, I should tell you, was reported by, I think it was Politico Playbook this morning, as having dinner with George W. Bush in Florida. They both own homes in a town in Florida, I guess.
I thought Tucker was anti-war and you know, rebranded himself as a paleo conservative. That's what I'd heard.
He's going through a rebranding of the rebranding.
Ah.
He is the right-wing populist who, by my count now, has a house in Maine and a house in Florida. May also have one in New York, I imagine, unless he stays in an Airbnb there when he does a show. He's the one who said, don't take the masks and all that too seriously.
Right.
Of course, then had his own, was in Maine broadcasting for some strange reason.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of tie is he going to wear in this third iteration of himself? He had the bow tie. Now he's at the right net. It's a bolo tie.
Bolo tie is next.
Right.
And we should also say
that's why he's meeting with Bush.
They reportedly, according to the Politico, they were having dinner at a third party's house. So it's nice that all these folks are having dinner parties. I remember those. I imagine they're all wearing their masks indoors while they have this dinner party. But here is Tucker Carlson. Instead of suggesting that the the presence of National Guardsmen in Washington, D.C. is a function of the insurrection that was driven by his network's insistence that the election was stolen by Joe Biden. He sees something else nefarious in the idea of having National Guardsmen in Washington for the inauguration.
Woman may have been trampled to death by the crowd. As of tonight, those are the three casualties we can confirm from the riot at the Capitol building on January 6th. In response to that, our leaders have assembled the largest military presence in Washington in all of American history during peacetime. In 1864, as the Civil War raged on the other side of the Potomac, and Americans died every day in large numbers in battle, there were fewer federal troops protecting Washington, D.C. than there are tonight. And it's truly a national force. The guardsmen you see in Washington have come from every state in the Union, as well as from Puerto Rico. And the question is, why is that? There's no practical or operational justification for it. For decades, Washington, D.C. has had the highest per capita law enforcement presence in the country, and one of the highest in the world. So there was no need to fly in troops from Alaska to keep the city safe. But keeping the city safe was hardly the point of the exercise. The murder rate in the District of Columbia has risen with terrifying speed over the last 6 months. Men, women, and children shot to death in the streets. But no one in charge seems to care about that or even notice their deaths. So no matter what they are telling you, those 26,000 federal troops are not there for your safety. Instead, unmistakably, the Democratic Party is using those troops to send the rest of us a message about power. We're in charge now. We run this nation from Honolulu to our colony in the Caribbean and everything in between, very much including where you and your family live. Do not question us. Men with guns enforce our decrees. We control the Pentagon. And indeed, they do control the Pentagon. Republicans have spent years ignoring the leftward drift of our officer corps, but we can't ignore it now. The mask is off. Our military leadership, the very same generals who howled at the idea of deploying American troops to stop an invasion of our southern border, those same generals sent tens of thousands of soldiers with rifles to Washington purely as a show of force on behalf of the political party they support. And once they did that, they then allowed Democratic politicians to degrade and politicize the military itself. Democrats in Congress demanded that the troops sent to Washington this week submit to a political purity test, ideological vetting, as they put it, to make certain that every soldier professed loyalty to the new regime. Not loyalty to our country, not loyalty to our Constitution, but loyalty to the aims of a specific political party. Nothing like that has ever happened in America. And just a few months ago, it would have been unimaginable.
Okay, first of all, nothing like that has ever happened in America. And nothing is still, as of today, has happened like that. There was no... The questioning of these soldiers was not as to their fealty to Joe Biden. It was, are you sure you're not a white supremacist? Are you sure you're not an extremist? Like the ilk that Tucker Carlson and his network encouraged to believe that the election was stolen. In fact, what's amazing about this is he's continuing on with the exact same project that drove people to attack the Capitol here. He is continuing on with the same level of paranoia and conspiracy theory. Now he is saying both on one hand that the Democrats ideologically control the military because they refuse to
which
go down to
laughable.
The border.
Which is laughable.
Laughable. And B, they also disregard the military simultaneously. So they both control and disparage the military. And what is going on here, I think, from a symbolic perspective, is the idea, because we know how much Donald Trump tried to politicize the military. We know this. And this is an attempt for our government to say, we all support a peaceful transition of power. And we are not going to let anybody to continue to interfere with it. And when Tucker Carlson characterizes this as some type of oppression of free Americans, that you cannot speak and you cannot talk, as opposed to recognizing, and of course, he starts off the clip by minimizing only three deaths because the other two deaths don't count, but only three deaths, as if you needed more deaths on a storming of the Capitol building to justify why people might be concerned, particularly with what we have seen from these right-wing paramilitary groups talking about, you know, their invasions. It's just, it's unbelievable. And we, I should also add, this is a network which came to a legal settlement with the family of Seth Rich, who they touted as having been possibly assassinated by some combination of the DNC and Hillary Clinton's, you know, octopus of killers, essentially. They settled with the Seth Rich's family for millions of dollars for what they did to the Rich family. But part of the settlement, and we only know this as of this weekend, because part of the settlement was that they could not reveal this settlement happened prior to the following the election.
Curious.
Very odd position for a media outlet to take, that they don't want this information that the Seth Rich, that they are conceding to the complete fiction of the Seth Rich conspiracy, that they haven't conceded that. They don't want that out before the election. That is a very odd position to take for a company that ostensibly doesn't have a stake in the election of somebody. I mean, this guy is so incredibly disingenuous, and he is, it is so dangerous what he's continued to allow to say. At this point, you would think there would be a slight amount of regret in the minds of folks like Tucker Carlson. And frankly, where's George Herbert, you know, where's George Bush, W. Bush, who supposedly, you know, had a problem with what Donald Trump was doing? Why is George Bush meeting with this guy for dinner if he is not on board with ginning up this type of conspiracy?
Well, I mean, Tucker Carlson, he's so against the usage of the military, of members of the police being used to advance the agenda of one political party's ends. I mean, they are supposed to be a neutral force, which is why I'm sure he stood up to the claims from the right wing and from his own network that the Insurrection Act should be used on Black Lives Matter protesters over the summer, or when Trump gassed peaceful protesters outside so we could get a photo op. I mean, it's so disingenuous that he is pretending to clutch his pearls about this when there's no evidence to support it, and when there was actual politicization of forces that use deadly weapons, not the military in its of itself, but the surrounding institutions. Nothing. He said nothing about that.
Nothing. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk just a little bit about some appointees that Joe Biden has picked and is considering, and maybe how you can help Joe Biden make a good choice when it comes to some of these DOJ appointments. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in just a moment. So the American prospect, they've been crushing it as of late. We've had David Dayan on, I think it was last week, or maybe the week before. They had a report on Friday in conjunction with The Intercept. It was confirmed and expanded upon on Sunday by Reuters that Joe Biden is leaning toward two attorneys with deep experience advising monopoly platforms to head the antitrust division at the Department of Justice. I mean, this is, when you talk about the revolving door and you talk about one of the problems, what is it, regulatory capture, this is what, this couldn't be a better example. Now, again, Joe Biden has not chosen these people yet, and one gets the sense that somebody's putting up a trial balloon. If these stories get out, you can we will put a link at majority.fm to a petition that is being pushed by Public Citizen to prevent these people from sitting in these positions. One is Renata Hess, former Justice Department official. So she has some experience, worked under the Obama administration. She also worked with Ted Cruz defending Google as a defendant 10 years ago. She helped shepherd the Amazon Whole Foods merger. I mean, we're talking about two of the biggest platforms here that have been engaged in what a lot of people think is antitrust violations for years.
And certainly Amazon has engaged in abusive workplace practices. So we're talking about
checks Amazon off every box.
The worst of the worst here.
She represented several pharmaceutical companies and other clients in antitrust cases. She is now the leading contender for the Assistant Attorney General for Antitrust. This is according to the Prospect and The Intercept on that Friday. There's another attorney, Juan Ortega, another Obama Justice Department veteran who defended J.P. Morgan Chase and several other financial firms in fraud cases and represented AT&T in its merger with Time Warner, also being considered. Now, look, I come from a long line of lawyers. I think that lawyers should be able to represent whomever they want in private practice. However, to handle these many cases, protecting against antitrust, the fact is that you are way more than likely to be inclined to seeing antitrust in a specific way.
You have relationships with the executives that you're supposed to be regulating. I mean, this is more than just revolving door. This is, especially in the tech realm, because of the amount of donations that big tech funnels to Democratic politicians, you can only see this as corruption, in my view.
And we'd say that a couple of years ago, apparently Hess seemed to dismiss antitrust as concerns from Google's control of the online search market. She said in a Federal Trade Commission hearing, when she was presumably not representing, the reason why people use Google search generally is because they like it better. Well, that may be the case. But when you push everything else out, I mean, it's just, look, we've talked about this many times on the show. There is a pre-Robert Bork / Ronald Reagan perspective on what antitrust and monopoly means and what is problematic about it. One is a measure of antitrust, just as does it provide cheap goods for consumers? And the other is, does antitrust provide an even playing field for competitors in a market? Does it protect citizens? Does it diminish corporate power? And it's the latter that I think we desperately need to reinstitute in this country. And you don't need to change any laws. It really comes down to personnel. Now, there's another candidate, Jonathan Cantor, who has co-chaired the antitrust department in a large corporate firm, but has helped file suits against some of these big companies for their antitrust violations. So,
and just quick point, the Democrats can't clutch their pearls about Trump's Twitter violations and social media violations and the spread of misinformation on Facebook, which is a massive problem in other platforms, and then simultaneously appoint people who are not going to break them up. Those are inconsistent views, and it's based in corruption and donations and a way too cozy relationship between the Democratic Party and big tech.
Without a doubt. On the upside, great pick for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Yeah.
Biden will nominate Rohit Chopra. He was at the, I think it was the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, an Elizabeth Warren acolyte. And as you know, she established that committee in the first place. So, but if folks want to find that that petition to pressure Joe Biden on those antitrust things, we've got a link at majority.fm. If you missed any part of this show, check us out on Peacock. Find us on the Choice app, 5 p.m., 10 p.m., and then on demand, check it out. All right. We will see you tomorrow. And for those of you who are sticking around for the fun half of the program, we will see you right now. You're still seeing us.
Hello.
The magic of video. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Reminder, the Noah McKee Show happening right after this one at 3 p.m. On that program today, Chris Lombardi, Napoleon DeLegend, and Joshua Kahn Russell. Reminder, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. You get 10% off. And the AM Quickie, 6-7 minutes of headline news. You can find it at amquickie.com or on anywhere in your podcast. Completely free. You can check it out on YouTube at our other channel, Majority Report Live. The Majority Report Audio, I think it is, or Majority Report Live. You can find that. Don't forget, the Antifada, they're now doing a Twitch stream, twitch.tv/TheAntifada or patreon.com/Antifada. Matt, what's happening in the Matt Lekian media universe?
Yeah, on Thursday on Left Reckoning, we're going to have Milton Alamadi, TMBS regular, going to talk to us about kind of an international perspective about what's all happening and also what's happening in Uganda with Yoweri Museveni and Bobi Wine. And on Literary Hangover, there's going to be a new episode this weekend. We're going to talk about Bacon's Rebellion and what happened at the Capitol and kind of draw some analogies there. And we'll talk about William Byrd's first year of his secret diary in 1709. So look forward to that, Literary Hangover fans. Patreon.com/Literary Hangover.
Bacon's Rebellion. I'm taken back to history class.
A lot of relevance in Bacon's Rebellion.
Yeah.
I guess let's take a moment and we will go to the fun half, 646-257-3920. Right?
Yeah.
RM for it. All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danner's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks! Reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
Almost says what?
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on!
Fuck them. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I am
got a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on! Well, come on! Well, come on! Really? Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am in total
pussy, 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 pussy.